this is kind of a, this might be a funny thing to say, but I think people who don't play music probably enjoy it more than people who do.
Eventually, the shine is going to wear off. Sooner or later, nagging questions about what could have been or what could still happen become too loud to ignore. Somewhere down the road, even the most dedicated amongst us are going to have an itch to scratch. In any long-term relationship, it is inevitable. And I'm not talking about love or any other strange emotions, referring to the title of Travis Book's solo album debut. I'm talking about our relationships with our jobs. Western North Carolina's Travis Book has a job that the vast majority of music artists would take in a heartbeat. As a founding member and bass player for the infamous Stringdusters, he has seen the group score 3 Grammy nominations, including a win for Best Bluegrass Album for Laws of Gravity in 2018, as well as 7 IBMA nominations with 4 wins in several categories over their now 18-year run, which is chock full of sold-out shows and gigs at ultra-coveted venues like the Ryman and festivals like Telluride and Bonnaroo. What do you do with all that success as you look at the likelihood of just, you know, more success? Well, if you're a music artist, one great way to freshen things up and fall in love all over again with making music is to do what artists like Libby Rodenboe of Mipso did, as well as Noam Pikelny of Punch Brothers, and what Hot Rise did with Red Knuckles and the Trailblazers, solo albums and side projects. This is where we find Travis Book today, having made his first solo album, Love and Other Strange Emotions. I found Travis Book at his home in Brevard, North Carolina on a Tuesday afternoon in fall 2023, ahead of a show in his ongoing series at the venue 185 King. We talked about where he finds himself in his music career, the abundance of great musicians in his hometown, making his own podcast, the Travis Book Happy Hour, and the E word, I'm talking emo here, all that and more, including more music from Travis Book's new album, which starts off with the song you're hearing now, A Little Too Much. I'm your host, Joe Kendrick, and this is Southern Songs and Stories, with our episode on Travis Book.
It's always been that way, so I've been told. That's just a little too sad to be true. I don't know. But I know that that's one point of view. A little too much hanging around. A little too much just feeling down. And I'm just a little too tired of this little old town.
Southern Songs and Stories is part of the podcast lineup of both Public Radio WNCW and Osiris Media. Osiris creates music podcasts and events to help music fans deepen their connection to the music they love with all of their shows at osirispod.com. Osiris works in partnership with Jam Bass, which connects music fans to the music they love and empowers them to go see live music. Capsule versions of Southern Songs and Stories are produced for broadcast on WNCW by me, Corey Askew. More information about this and other podcasts from Grassroots Radio WNCW at WNCW.org.
Great to hang with you ahead of your show tonight at 185 King.
Yeah, thanks for coming up.
Lots and lots of stuff going on with you, Travis. Tell us about, if we could start with Love and Other Strange Emotions, and maybe give us a primer on what your solo music is versus what Infamous String Duster's music is, and maybe where those two intersect.
Yeah, I play every Tuesday at 185 King Street, and one of the things I did there was put together basically like a rock band to play my music. I played electric guitar and had Mike Ashworth on electric bass and Jeff Sipe on drums, and that ensemble, I did that about three or four times over the course of a couple years and realized that it had a real sound and there was a real life to these original tunes I'd written. So I decided to make a record that really came out of that aesthetic, which is pretty different than the String Dusters, which is essentially just a string band, you know?
It really is. And I sense your love of soul. I don't want to use the word emo, but I guess I used the word emo.
Yeah, I didn't realize I had so much emo in me until I made the record, and then I was kind of listening back, and I thought, oh wow, this a lot of these songs are about love and about fear and about these other sort of emotional states. And so, you know, the emo is the last thing I thought I was, but I don't know. Maybe it was like this is like my emo record,
and that's not a bad thing. Emo got a bad rap. I guess it got too popular in the wrong places or something.
Yeah, it's the aesthetic, I think, is you know, as Americana as it can get, with elements of rock and blues and soul and country and little bits of, you know, New Orleans mixed in there. So it's not like emo pop music in any sense of the word, but it definitely has an emotional undercurrent.
Now, I know you write songs with Infamous String Dusters, but how did the songwriting go for this record? Was it all you?
With a couple songs that I'd co-written with people over the years, and it was kind of a mixture of stuff that there's a couple songs that the String Dusters have recorded that needed an electric treatment. The first song I ever wrote, or maybe it's the second song I ever wrote, is on this record. So I went back and found some things that hadn't come to life yet. And then also in the course of playing with this ensemble and getting more familiar with the electric guitar, I'd gone out on the road and taken an electric guitar with me on tour and written some songs specifically for it. So it really kind of covers every phase of my career so far.
Tell us about your band, because you've got a crack band behind you. I mean, you know, String Dusters, it doesn't get much better, but with your record here, you've got Jeff Sipe, Mike Ashworth, Tommy Maher, Derek Gardner, Daniel Seraph, and then I think Lindsay Liu is on a track or two.
Yeah, Lindsay Liu sings some harmony vocals. There's this depth of talent right here in this area. You know, Tommy and Daniel live up in Asheville, and Daniel's an incredible guitar player. Tommy, of course, plays Dobro and Fireside Collective, but he plays lap steel on this record. And Mike Ashworth is a multi-instrumentalist for the Steep Canyon Rangers. He lives here in town. He lives just like a couple blocks away. Had him play electric bass because he's an incredible bass player. Jeff Sipe, of course, being one of the greatest drummers alive. We're lucky to have him in Brevard. And then Derek Gardner is someone who's not on a lot of people's radar, but he's an incredible keyboard player and an amazing person. He teaches music in the schools and absolutely shreds on the weekends, and he's amazing.
I don't know how many people know just how lucky we are here in a place like Brevard, Western North Carolina, with honestly a hotbed of talent. It's not like that everywhere else.
It really isn't. And you know, one of my bandmates lives outside in New York, and he comes down and plays my Tuesday night shows. And every Tuesday is different, has a completely different group of people. And he comes down and plays, and he's like, man, I really wish I could get something going like this where I live. You know, he lives in Long Island and near New York, but there's just not the per capita The amount of amazing musicians we have relative to our population in this part of the country is kind of astounding, you know. And I've played with Trey Hensley, who's up in Johnson City, and I play with Sean Lane from Blue Highway, who's just over the hill outside of Greenville, and then, you know, everybody who's, there's so many players here in town, in Brevard, and in the Asheville area, there's just, musicians are just like falling out of the trees around here. It's incredible.
Yeah, and it just sort of feeds on itself when you have that critical mass like you do now, and then all of the school programs, the jam programs, et cetera, to get kids interested in acoustic-based roots-style music. And so you've got a natural audience built in, but it's also a very informed audience too. So it's better in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. The audiences here are incredible. And the group of people that come down every Tuesday for the show to see the taping of the happy hour that I do down there, they are it's one of the hippest audiences I've ever played in front of, because every week is different, but they're always there and they're always really, really stoked.
Can we talk a little bit about the Travis Spoke happy hour?
Yeah.
It's a great podcast. It's a live event. I want to ask how it's unique in, say, your context as a music artist. How much of it is an extension of, say, your MO as a bass player in a bluegrass inspired band?
It's really a pretty significant departure from my role in the String Dusters, in that it's different, and what is demanded of me is different every time. And I also am, in some sense, kind of the band leader, where the String Dusters is much more of a five-way kind of democracy. With the happy hour, I'm asking someone to come in, and it's usually someone who's a solo artist or someone who plays in a band, and we kind of assemble an ensemble around them and hone that ensemble to whatever sound they want to do for the show, and then we present this collaborative vibe in front of an audience, and I do an interview sort of like this, but live in front of the audience. And I started this show during the pandemic because I could live stream from the Grey Eagle, and not even thinking about it as a podcast, I was just putting out this content because there was a demand for it. And then it dawned on me at some point that the format might work really well as a podcast. So then I started editing those existing episodes down to these podcasts. And now the episodes and the taping themselves are a little bit more crafted to build good content for the podcast. And it's been interesting to sort of see that natural evolution, but underneath it all is just the opportunity to bring musicians here to Western North Carolina, and for me to get to play with them, collaborate with them, create really unique music in the moment.
So you kind of came to your inner talk show host almost by accident.
Exactly. And that's exactly kind of what I was thinking. I was thinking almost like late night talk show, only with a bunch of music, you know, a little bit of E-Town vibe, but much heavier on the interview. A little bit like sort of Mountain Stage or any of those other NPR programs, but I'm much more involved in the actual music, and the interview is pretty substantial. And it works, I think it works great as a podcast. The Bluegrass Situation is my partner on that now, and so we're able to reach a much, much larger audience with that.
Catch the first train.
That's the song Leavin' by Travis Book from his album Love and Other Strange Emotions, which to me sounds like a breakup song, but which also could point to what I spoke of earlier, that yearning to, at least for a time, pivot away from work as a series of projects and get to enjoy the process and the moment. One place Travis will not be leaving anytime soon is his hometown of Brevard. It is home to his family as well, with his mom living across the street, who was kind enough to put me up for the night I was in town. To the surprise of no one who is familiar with the western North Carolina mountains, the area is also home to a smorgasbord of trails, which hikers, equestrians, and mountain bikers flock to year-round. Travis Book enjoys biking on those trails, but he also takes it upon himself to periodically break out some tools and help remove debris and meticulously rebuild parts of those trails so they don't erode and become unsafe. Volunteering like that exemplifies another parallel between a kind of humility and groundedness that I noted in our conversation as being so evident in the music world. Playing bluegrass is often as technically challenging as it is an uphill climb financially, requiring a kind of calm acceptance, which seems to go hand in hand with connecting with an audience. Here's Travis Book.
I mean, the cynic in me would be like, well, yeah, because they're easy to stay connected when you're only playing to 30, 40 people, right? I mean, and then you point to it when you say, well, you know, it's not like it's bluegrass music. I mean, only recently with Billy Strings coming on the scene are we seeing massive bluegrass shows. You know, in Green Sky, bluegrass will play for a lot of people, but by and large, bluegrass and acoustic music is played, with the exception of festivals, is played for small groups of people. You know, they're played in listening rooms like the Down Home and like 185 King Street, and that's just in part by virtue of the size of the audience. But the music itself is very intimate, and it being an oral tradition that is passed down, and something that it's also very common for people who are appreciators of this music, and by this music I would sort of point to sort of like bluegrass and beyond. You know, they also, a lot of these people also play it, and it's this intimate part of their life beyond just being a fan of it. You know, there's not a lot of Taylor Swift fans that are also musicians, but there are, you know, most, like, I would say almost most people who are into like Sam Bush probably have a musical or musically bent in at least a little bit, you know?
Yeah. For example, myself, I feel somewhat self-conscious being out in all of the circles that I'm at and being at a Merlefest or wherever, out at a show or somewhere somebody's going to start picking and they just say, oh, well, what do you play or do you play? Kind of assuming that I do play, and right. I really don't. And I think, man, I really need to learn some chords or something so I can like have, there's like this whole other level of experience that I don't have because of that.
Yeah. Although I would say, I think people, this might be a funny thing to say, but I think people who don't play music probably enjoy it more than people who do.
No pressure. I guess the pressure's off or what? You know, you just don't feel like you have to keep up or what?
Well, I think, you know, before I played music, there was a certain kind of magic to it. Because I didn't understand, the more I understand it, the harder it is to enjoy, I think, because there are so many. Because it's almost like I know too much. Not that I know a lot about music, but like I've played a lot of it, and I can understand exactly. If I may know what the band is doing, or I may be able to, you know, I just like. And also, there's also the whole comparison, which is runs through every part of our lives, and you can't even help it. You know, if I'm a bass player and I'm watching another bass player, I'm learning from them. I'm checking out things that I like, things that I don't. You know, I can't help it. It's sort of the same thing like when I go ride my bike on the trails that I work on. I can't ride by those ditches and drains without analyzing them, you know? I have more fun on the trails I don't work on than I do on the ones that I do work on. And it's the same thing with music. I think that there's a beauty in not being overly familiar with what's going on and just a purity of just enjoyment. And so I don't think that there's at all a deficiency if you don't play an instrument or if you don't play music. The appreciation of it is almost as essential as the creation of it in and of itself.
Well, can we talk about your maturity now, no longer being, say, the fresh new face of Jamgrass, Newgrass? How is it as an artist at this stage in your career? And do you have any thoughts, like, how's it played out? Has it played out like you thought it would?
That's a really That's an interesting question. I think specifically because it is an interesting phenomenon, sort of coming to the recognition that maybe that myself and the String Dusters were not, the new band smell has worn off. We've been at this for a while. Almost, you know, the Dusters have been playing almost 20 years, and I've been playing bluegrass and driving around for longer than that. And it kind of crept up on me because you're just out there, you're in the van and you're getting on planes and you're just playing the music. But this sort of recently, this kind of reorientation of everything that I do, for the last 15 years, I basically just played music in the String Dusters. And recently, you know, thanks primarily to the pandemic and the pause in work, I've been able to discover a lot of other things, a lot of other musical opportunities, and have had the space and the opportunity to kind of follow those. And I realize that it takes a lot of sort of confidence in my experience and a little bit of hubris to take on, you know, playing all this different music with all these different people and continuing to try to find new horizons and explore new things as opposed to just mastering the things that I know how to do. And to be able to do that and to do it without being afraid of failing, I think is the biggest sign of sort of maturing and easing into sort of the middle ages of what I hope is a very long career. Feeling comfortable getting on stage and just doing my best and knowing that that's probably going to be enough.
Because you've got a career now, you've got an audience that has expectations. It's not the same as 15 years ago or however long ago.
Yeah, definitely.
And you want to stay creative. You want to push that envelope, but you don't want to go off into whatever that alter ego that Garth Brooks had, that album.
Chris Gaines,
you don't want to do that.
Some people might say that's what I did with this record. I have this, you know, I have the luxury of having just such a rock solid situation with the String Dusters and the support and how challenging that is. The support that I get from those bandmates, my brothers, and also how challenging that environment is and how high our expectations are on each other. It's a really incredible work situation to be part of and band to have built. And we get to go to a lot of amazing places and play a lot of great music. And it is enough to you know, it keeps the roof over my head. And then with this extra, I get to try other things. You know, like for example, I got to put out this record. That's a total departure from anything I've ever done. And I don't know how it's going to do. I think WNCW is playing it. There's probably, all in all, not that many people may hear it. And if this was my main deal, like if I had quit the String Dusters to start my own solo career, I would be so unbelievably stressed out. And there would be so much pressure on me to do something with this record. I would be checking the spins on Spotify every 6 hours, right? But because the String Dusters is enough. It's enough personally and musically as well. It's really enough. It's a wonderful situation playing in that band, and I will do that until we can't play anymore. We might even be like the Seldom Scene, where we completely replace ourselves. There'll be like a whole other generation carrying on the String Dusters. I don't know. But I think we'll be doing that forever, and because that situation has everything that I need, it affords me the freedom without pressure to try kind of anything else and to try to make whatever kind of music I want. And I wanted to make basically a rock and roll record. And from a commercial standpoint, it doesn't make sense for a bluegrass bass player in an ensemble to make a rock and roll record and like front their own band. There's just not a lot of parallels. I'm not building on anything. I'm just sort of making something up out of space, you know, but because the Dusters is so great and so viable, it there's just like infinite space to try all these other things.
The Truth Is Out There, wrapping up our episode on Travis Book with another song from his album, Love and Other Strange Emotions. With Travis playing guitar and singing lead, Mike Ashworth on bass, Jeff Sipe on drums, and Derek Gardner on keys. Mike Ashworth is also in the band Steep Canyon Rangers, and we featured them on this podcast in the episode Arm in Arm in Their Journey, Steep Canyon Rangers, which goes back to the year 2020. That episode, along with over 100 more, await you on your podcast app of choice, as well as on our website, southernsongsandstories.com. We appreciate you being here and hope you can help us by spreading awareness about the series. It's as easy as telling a friend and following this podcast on your platform of choice, both of which are quick, easy, and free. Next, it takes just a moment to give us a top rating, and where it's an option, a review. It makes a great difference because the more top reviews and ratings we get, the more visible we become to everyone on those platforms, which means that more people just like you connect with artists like Travis Book. This series is a part of the lineup of both Public Radio WNCW and Osiris Media, with all the Osiris shows available at osirispod.com. You can also hear new episodes on Bluegrass Planet Radio at bluegrassplanetradio.com. Thanks to Corey Askew for producing the radio adaptations of this series on Public Radio WNCW, where we worked with Joshua Ming, who wrote and performed our theme songs. I'm your host and producer, Joe Kendrick, and this is Southern Songs and Stories, the music of the South and the artists who make it.
Getting dark now, brother, it's getting hard to see the light. The truth is out there, let's hope this is the darkest part of the night. If we open up our hearts, open up our mind, there's no telling, brother, what we may find. If we turn toward love and not toward hate, we just might heal each other. Hey, if it's not too late, truth is out there, brother, and if you want it, I'll set you free. Out there, brother, and if you want it, set you free. A lot of people talking, tell me, who are you gonna believe? A lot of people talking, which ones are you gonna believe?
Fun last question, Travis. I know we're running short on time. So, 20 questions that you could choose from, awesome. Mostly bluegrass centric.
Okay. How many of these do you want?
Just any one that you want to choose, or any that you want to answer.
All right. Let's see. How many? Oh, wow. Interesting. Oh, these are good. If you're running for president of the United States, what is your stump speech? If I were president, I would be probably unelectable, because I would be pushing for compassion, just all around, just using compassion as the thing that would sort of direct all of our public policy. You know, a lot of people need taken care of, and a lot of people need understanding and a lot of kindness.